Okay, welcome to the PMFA Best Practices Operations Call. I am Joel Smith. I'm a franchisee in Iowa. We have 8 stores, mostly in the Des Moines area and then in the Davenport area. The purpose of these calls is to help owners work on their business and not just in it. Second is to learn and share systems and strategies to drive profitability so we can not only survive but thrive. PMI is going to do the best they can help us, but they're not going to solve our problems for us. And so we can help ourselves by working together. And then number 3 for the purpose is to have a place where franchisees, multi-unit leaders, and GMs can connect and learn and teach best practices and have a place where our voices are heard and we can ask questions and be supported. All right, so today's presentation is part of the Think and Be Proactive and this is part 2. This webinar will help you gain better appreciation for establishing a plan first, produce second approach towards your daily activities. My hope is that you'll walk away with a new commitment to daily planning and a few tips and tricks on how to effectively stand out as an organization. So last month, we talked about having a clear vision of your desired outcome. So we discussed the need to know what an A-level performance looks like on a daily basis and expecting to hit it. We talked about that without a clear desired outcome, we're just simply along for the ride, kind of leaving our outcomes up to chance. And also that having a clear vision is more important than goals. Think and Be Productive, Part 2. Today we're talking about principle number 2, plan first, produce second. So plan your entire day before you produce anything. I know that sounds a little radical to some people. You might be thinking, well, wait a minute, you don't know what's going to come up. You know, my day always has interruptions, so how can I plan for that? Well, you can't always plan for all the interruptions, but you can plan as much as you possibly can. It's a lot easier to adjust a plan than it is to wing it without a plan. You know, when surprises pop up and you've already thought through what your options are, your possibilities, you can quickly adjust much easier. Okay, Abraham Lincoln says, said, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree and I will spend the first 4 sharpening the axe. That does seem a little extreme, and I'm not sure how many trees Abraham Lincoln chopped down. But I think his point was that whatever we're going to do, we need to give an adequate amount of planning time to prepare us for that. It's much easier to chop down a tree with a sharp axe than it is a dull axe. And it's much easier to operate a Papa Murphy's if we've thought out what's going to happen and we know what it looks like and we've navigated the course and aren't caught by surprises or inefficient systems or inefficient habits. So I think that's what he's saying. Planning is one of the most important skills you can possess as a restaurant leader. However, not many leaders naturally plan well. We usually have to learn the hard way and through natural consequences. By default, we usually plan the bare minimum. I don't know why that is, but that's as human beings, that's what we do. We plan the bare minimum. We get burned by something and we learn to plan a little bit more. Plan for the things that have hurt us in the past. We plan for the things that we can anticipate, but we really have this this desire just to get started most of the time. There are some people out there that that really plan way too much, and they're planning and they're looking at the big overall view, and they have a hard time landing the plane. That is true, but in the restaurant industry, we struggle much more from people that fail to plan than we do people that plan too much. So I want to talk about a few roadblocks to the planning first strategy. So our greatest obstacle in production is our natural tendencies. It's easier to be mediocre or average or just to do what comes natural than it is to be proactive and think through things. So if you want to be mediocre or average, just do what comes naturally. For most people, it feels most natural to embrace a plan as you go or I'll cross that bridge approach than it is to take, you know, the time to actually follow a system or follow something that maybe delays your production a little bit in order to get a better plan under your belt. In the Papa Murphy's world, it's not uncommon to see, you know, a store that might have kind of a plan as you go approach. You walk in the door at 8 o'clock in the morning and you just start doing things. And you figure, well, I'll do my counts later, I'll count my drawers later, I'll do this, whatever. You just kind of start doing whatever whatever's first, you know, whatever seems to be the most important. And that's a very dangerous trap to get into. I've seen that too. Same thing with the night crew. 4 o'clock in the afternoon and the night crew comes in and they just kind of go up front and put on their apron and they go up front and they just start kind of doing whatever the first ticket, you know, grab the first ticket or they start restocking the make line. And so the first instinct is just to start doing it. So four common roadblocks to planning. The first one is inertia, the inertia roadblock, or routine. So this routine basically says, this is how we've always done it. So we don't need to plan it. We're just going to do it the way we've always done it. There's a story about a gentleman who was newly married, and his wife was preparing a meal for him. She made ham. And so he observed her making this ham, and he noticed that she cut off both ends of the ham and discarded that. And so he asked her about that. He said, so why do you cut off the ends of the ham? And his new wife says, well, I don't know. That's the way my mom taught me to do it. We've just always done it that way. So he had a chance, you know, a few weeks later to meet his mother-in-law or to eat with his mother-in-law. And he asked her the same question. So, you know, your daughter cuts off the ends of the hams. Why? She said she learned that from you. Why do you do that? She said, well, I don't know. I guess that's just the way we've always done it in our family. My mom taught me how to do that. So a little while later, they get a chance to talk with grandma. And so he asked her the same thing. He says, so, you know, your daughter and your granddaughter, they cut the ends off the ham. And I'm just curious to know why you did that. And she says, oh, well, that's easy. When I was raising my family, we just had this little small oven. And so in order to fit the ham in the oven, we had to cut off the ends. And so that's why they did it. I think we can do the same thing in the workplace where we just carry on traditions and we don't even know why we're doing it. You know, we can just keep doing things and not know. When I purchased our Des Moines stores, we purchased four Des Moines stores about 12 years ago, and they were already in operation when we bought them. And I noticed this. I came in and started observing what was going on, and I noticed that they were, first thing that they would do every day was chop dough. And I asked them, started asking a lot of questions. They were chopping dough for that day. So their habit was to chop dough in the morning, and then in the evening at 4 o'clock, the night crew would come in and sheet all that dough for the evening. And then they would leave all of the totes unwashed for the next day, and the morning crew would wash all the totes. So here you have the morning crew washing all the totes and chopping dough, the night crew. And I asked them why they did this, and I said, well, that's just how we've always done it. But they weren't thinking through a better way to do it. They weren't seeking to find out what the right way to do it or what Papa Murphy says to do it or how do the stores that are really performing well do it. They just did it because that's the way we've always done it. And so rather than, you know, taking time to navigate a wise course, they just kind of take the trail that they're on and they just go with it. And so so the inertia roadblock is pretty dangerous. So you guys have probably seen that a lot too, where people just kind of do things because this is the way we've always done it. And that's the problem with that is we get into habits then. When there's no structure and no systems in place, and those standards can start to drift, and then bad habits will start, and then new people will come in, and then that's just the way it's done. Habits and routines can be good or they can be bad. Obviously, we want to fall into good habits and good routines, but bad habits and bad routines are just as strong. In fact, sometimes even stronger and harder to get out of. So the second roadblock is a willful roadblock. this would be the roadblock that somebody might say, I would rather do it wrong and on my own terms than to do it right on someone else's terms. That's a bad way to think. But we've all seen that before too. Sometimes, you know, they don't like it when someone else has a system that tells them what to do. They would rather just do it on their own. It's usually a control issue with that. If somebody really truly needs to do things on their own terms, maybe growing up they really didn't get anything on their own terms. They had kind of a controlling upbringing, a controlling parent, or whatever the case might be, and so they kind of rebel against that, and so they don't want to do anything on somebody else's terms. So that's a personal issue that people have to get through with the willful roadblock, typically. And then there's also an impatient roadblock. You know, we're wired in such a way that we seek instant results. You know, we think the sooner we get started, the sooner that we can be done with this. So we walk in the door and we just kind of have this hankering just to get after it. So we put our apron on and we just start going. We don't even think through it. Navigating through the planning stage can feel like torture to a doer. And some people are doers. There's a lot of doers out there, which they're good to have. But if we don't put planning to the doing, we can be very ineffective and inefficient. So doers tend to rush through the planning stage and they jump right into the action. They fail to prepare their axe for maximum production. In fact, to them, sharpening their axe is a waste of time. Sometimes people think planning things out is a waste of time. You know, people that are doers, they're much more comfortable planning as they go rather than taking the time and being strategic. So that's the third roadblock to planning. Fourth is the anticipation roadblock. We need to expect the unexpected. We need to anticipate a reason to plan, an awareness of what could happen. But sometimes we don't even think about the possibility of what might not work out. We just come in and we just start doing. We just start going and we don't anticipate. We need to think through our options and anticipate a change before it happens. You know, we need to ask ourselves the questions, what happens if, you know, if this happens, then what should we do? We should look at our options and figure out all the information that we have on hand at the time to help us make better decisions down the road. But sometimes we just kind of take it as it comes, take it in stride, and that's a dangerous place to be. So great planners consider solutions before the problem happens. But that you can't do that real time. You've got to do that ahead of time. So the benefits to planning first. The law of navigation is something that John Maxwell wrote in the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And he writes, anyone can steer the ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. Leaders who are good navigators are capable of taking their people just about anywhere. And that's true. There's a benefit of leadership in planning that's really, really important. Leaders that plan well are respected. Leaders that plan well help other people to feel confident in knowing what they're doing. It brings clarity. When we see a leader that's in charge and has a plan, we naturally are going to be drawn to that person. We're naturally going to want to be more like that person. We're going to want to learn what they learn because they're more productive. They're a better leader. They get better results and so on and so forth. When we already know what the future looks like, we become clear-minded, or at least more clear-minded, and less anxious. I think that's important. So we get this confidence when we plan first and produce second, because we can anticipate what's coming forward. We already know what it looks like because we've thought through it. Like in our company, I've always told my managers that if myself or you know, one of my area supervisors calls a general manager at 10 o'clock in the morning, we want them to know what's going to happen throughout their whole day. You know, if we call 10 o'clock in the morning, we want to say, hey, how much dough are you going to make today? And we want them to be able to tell us how much dough we're going to make. they should say, oh, we're going to make 2.5 batches of regular dough, and we're going to make a batch of our thin crusts. Because they've already thought through that. They've already run through the system. We should be able to ask the question, who do you have working tonight? And they should be able to tell you who's working, when they're coming in, what the plan is. They should know that. They should have that top-of-mind awareness of what's going to happen because they plan it out first. If we dug in a little deeper and asked them what order they were going to start, or they were going to do their production in, they should have an answer on how they're going to do that. We'll talk about that a little more here in a few minutes. But so the idea is that when a manager or a leader has things planned out first, there's a confidence that comes with that. You know, people need to know that there's a captain steering the ship and that there's a plan. People will follow a confident leader, but they'll run from an anxious one. The biggest way that I can think of to create anxiety in yourself, if that's what your goal is just provide as much uncertainty into your day as you can. You know, just don't think through things and easily get surprised when things pop up that you didn't consider. That's an easy way to be anxious. This is a tough culture to work in the restaurant business, partially because a lot of people deal with anxiety. Anxiety is nothing more than fear. It's the fear of the unknown. And so by being a great planner, you can eliminate a lot of fear from your day. You can't eliminate all of it. You don't always know what's going to happen. But if you plan well and you make sure that you stick to this principle, plan first, produce second, you're gonna reduce a lot of anxiety out of your life. And if we teach our managers to plan well, we're automatically going to remove some of that anxiety out of their life as well. But if we are people that plan as we go, our managers are going to learn the same thing. And if we're stressed out all the time and chasing our tails and always feeling anxious, we're going to look anxious to them. And again, people run from anxious people. And so planning helps us decide that a bit. The confidence that comes from planning gives clarity to everyone, but anxiety that comes from chaos destroys the work culture. We are more confident when we know exactly what we need to produce, when we know the order it needs to be produced, when we know who's going to produce it, and when we know how long it's going to take to produce it. And those are pretty important. And you can't know that if you're just doing a wait-and-see kind of philosophy. You have to plan it out. And you can have a pretty good idea of what you're doing. So let's take a look real quick of what this looks like in our stores. All right? So obviously, we all have different experiences in our stores. And in just a minute, I'm going to open up the lines and want to hear from you guys. Tell us, what it looks like in your store. But I'll give you an idea in our store. A few of these tips and tricks that we use and we prioritize in our store for planning. First of all, we have something called a Red Book that we use. And I know most of you aren't on the video portion, but if you are, a Red Book looks like this. I'll hold up the camera. It's a checklist. It's like a daily checklist, AM and PM, to keep us in a systematic pace throughout the day. We do this kind of in chunks. We have kind of an arrival section, a setup section, a planning section, a section for books, and a section for production. And we do it in a systematic order that really helps us. And the book itself funnels our managers towards planning first. So if you follow the Red Book, you can't help but to plan first and produce second. So during the production time, you're going to know what you're doing because you've already planned it out. So our Red Book is good. So, for instance, we want our Red Book, at least the morning part, filled out before, usually around 9:30 is the time that we have that filled out. So they'll come in and they'll do books and they'll do a little bit of setup, but then that Red Book with all the counts and the planning gets set up by 9:30, and by 9:30 the plan is already made. Everybody knows what's going on. Before we had the Red Book, we had kind of a daily plan sheet that we print out. So it's evolved over the years. But, going back before that, before we had that, managers were just planning as you go all the time, and it was just chaotic. You know, it was really just running in chaos as opposed to really having order to your day. And so the Red Book is one of the tools that we use in our company. And if anybody has any questions about the Red Book, you can get a hold of me, and I can show you what that is. It really is a good tool. Maybe we'll talk about it in some more training down the road too. But we also have something that we call our ABC planning. And this is a way to prioritize our tasks. For instance, if you imagine your prep list, you just have a vision of the prep list in your mind, and you've got a list on the right side of what you have to do. So you've got maybe 10 or 12 tasks that you have to do of a product that you need to create. When I train people, we focus on that list of tasks. And so I'll say something like, okay, so we've got 12 things to do today. We can do these in a lot of different order. We could do it. We could do it alphabetically, and we could start with the artichokes, and we could end with the zucchini, or we could do it hardest to easiest. So we start with the cheese, and then we end with whatever zucchini or spinach, or we could throw a dart at the prep chart and just kind of do it randomly, or we could just try to mix it up every day so it's different. But in our company, we don't teach people to have such a loose, arbitrary way of deciding what order. We teach the ABC planning method, which is basically we divide all of the different tasks. We just write next to the task in A, B, or C, which prioritizes. So an A would be something that needs to be done by 11 o'clock in the morning before we open. This would be things that we just don't have product for. If we don't have a salad, we need to get salads done by 11 o'clock. If we are out of mushrooms, mushrooms becomes an A item. If we don't have enough to make the first pizza with mushrooms on it. A B item would be a product that we have enough to get us through the day, but we don't have enough to get us through the evening. So we need to have that done by 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So we have a little bit of time that we don't have to prioritize having that done in the morning necessarily, but it needs to get done in the afternoon. So that's a B item. And a lot of our prep items on the prep list are B items. That's a healthy way to look. And then there's the C items. These are the things that they need to get done, but we're not actually going to use them until the next day. For instance, dough. Chopping dough is typically a C item. It's not less important. Of course, chopping dough is as important as anything in our store, but it's a C item. So for us, we will do our best not to put dough ahead of something that we need as an A or B item, except when timing is involved. If we just need to really chop our dough before noon, before we get busy, then we'll prioritize that. But typically, we'll go ahead and just list out all of our different prep items and list A, Bs, and Cs, and then we'll do them in that order. That keeps us systematic as opposed to just kind of random things. If you don't have something in place like that, and you're a multiple store owner, you're going to have everything being done a different way every day from one store to another, and it really can turn into chaos. It really can turn into having a whole bunch of different systems that are in different people's heads, leading to different results. Another tool that we use in our company, and we probably need to use this one more, but it's what I call benchmarking. And this would be to set progressing finish lines throughout the day. We like to use the term finish line in our company a lot so that we can really put an emphasis on getting something done on time. So 3 o'clock is a finish line to be locked and loaded for the evening. But then through that, we'll also use benchmarking and I like to use benchmarking a lot if I'm running a shift or running store. So here's what that looks like. It's when you set time goals for stages of the day. For example, I want to have certain things done by 11 o'clock before we open. I don't want that to go beyond that. And then maybe I want to have another time goal set for 12 o'clock. So we get this part of the prep chart done by 11 o'clock. This part of the prep chart needs to be done by 12. And then by 1 o'clock or 1:30 or 1:15, depending on what it is, another section needs to get done. So we map it out. We kind of break it up and we map it out. And that's really effective because if you don't do that and you just have a big list with either no finish line or maybe a 3 o'clock finish line, then you don't know how to pace yourself. then you might be thinking, you know what, I can kind of go slow here because I think I have plenty of time. We can play catch up, or we can get as much done as we can. But if you put benchmarking in place where time goals based on the clock, then you have to work fast just to hit each one of those benchmark, and then you find yourself getting done early because you're working at an efficient pace through each one. It's really having bite-sized chunks throughout the day to have these little mini goals. And, you know, we can really be more productive when we do this. And I find that to be very beneficial, especially for newer employees that's just learning the system, or employees that just have a hard time with motivation, just have a hard time with you know, internal time goals. So that's been very very beneficial for our company. It creates little mini victories, and that helps people to see progress in their speed as well. And it also brings teamwork to the day. Everybody's working together to hit these different benchmarking. So that's important. Another tool that we've used also is, in order to plan well, is we'll have, this isn't necessarily on a daily basis, but this is more event planning. For instance, Super Bowl and Valentine's Day. You know, we had about 3 weeks prior to the Super Bowl, we had a meeting that we brought our general managers together, and we talked about we have a spreadsheet called Holiday Projections. So we do forecasting for all of our stores, not just how many units per day we're going to sell, but we forecast how many heart-shaped pizzas we're going to sell. And we've got a whole spreadsheet that we've been doing for years on this. We communicate this and print out the sheets and hand it to everybody, and we make sure every manager understands what the plan is, the individual plan for their store is, and every store is going to have its own plan that's going to look a little bit different. And so we take that time approximately 3 weeks prior to the event, and we just talk through it. We make sure that everybody knows what to do. It's amazing the anxiety that is removed from our managers when we do that. You know, if we were just to tell the managers that, okay, on this day we're going to sell 500 pizzas and you need to be ready for it and you need to figure out how to do that, our managers would go crazy with that. Even ones that have gone through it before would go crazy with it because they don't they need to have a plan. They need somebody to come alongside of them and to help them with the navigation part of this and to really set up the plans and to follow through with them and to provide expertise. It removes a lot of anxiety. And sure enough, you know, we have pretty good success because we talk about it. We communicate it to the managers pretty well. In fact, sometimes there's gaps and we don't communicate little pieces here and there, and then it's something doesn't go as well as it could be, and so then we learn from it. We take notes and write that down, and we make sure that the next year we do talk about that. We address those things. And then we also talk about the event after the fact, too. So after the event's over, we always ask the question, so how did it go? What could we have done differently? Because that helps us for the following year. It helps us know something to focus on the following year, what we can do. So if you don't do that, if you just kind of a few days ahead of the event, or even maybe a week ahead of the event, you give somebody some instructions and you give somebody a general idea of maybe how much product to make, and then you go into it and you have mediocre at best results in your operations, and you don't talk about it much afterwards, you're not going to get better. And the lack of planning will hold you back from the kind of success you need. That's why, you know, restaurant owners that have been doing it for a long time are just so much better at it than managers or restaurant owners that are just doing it to begin with, because they haven't figured out how to plan and they don't have the experience of what takes place. So planning should be based on experience, but it should also be based on all of the information that you have in order to make wise decisions going forward. So, all right. So I hope some of this resonates with you, and I would love to hear what you guys have to say about planning first and producing second. So I'm going to take the mute off, or actually I'll leave it on the mute, and you guys can unmute yourselves when you want to talk, but